This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, we're live on air, TSN Radio 1290 here in Winnipeg. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We begin our Illegal Curve Fantasy Hockey Preview Show by welcoming back to the program our good friend from McKean's Hockey, Gus Katsaros, joins us on the line. Gus, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
The pleasure is always mine. Thanks, guys, for having me back on.
Exactly. The tradition continues, Gus. We're going to talk about those big point getters, the guys that you can build the backbone of your fantasy hockey team on. That is fantasy hockey forwards. You know, before we get into specific players, because there's always, you know, the guys, you know, who do you like, who do you dislike starting a season, you know, what's your overwhelming strategy? Do you have one strategy in mind when you enter into your draft room and you're in a traditional draft pool, goals and assists being the main focus? What's your strategy? What are you looking for when you take that first round selection?
Well, I mean, overall, you're probably in a pool that's, let's just assume it's 10 to 12, even 20 players deep. You probably get a pretty decent forward. And that's the main reason why I think I'm on the show today, because I think you need to focus on a forward in order for that to be your first selection. Similar, exactly to your point, you are now establishing your base. This is the meat and potatoes of how much you expect to essentially establish what your players are going to produce over the season. This star player can make or break a pool. If you miss just by a pick, that's fine. If you miss because of injury, that's out of your out of the realm of your control. But if you pick a decent enough player right off the bat and they overexceed essentially what your expectations are, it could take some picks that may not necessarily pan out a little bit later on in your roster to a new level. It's a nice way to be able to make up some points from some straggling players that you're just not getting a lot of production from.
If you were to start, you have first overall pick, Gus. It's, you know, you're sitting down for your draft. Is it Connor McDavid coming off your lips, or is it Nikita Kucherov?
Yeah, I can't see how it would be anything other than McDavid. Like, you got to give Kucherov credit. I mean, he's a worthy secondary adversary. The only thing that would keep McDavid out of being the Art Ross Trophy winner, I think, is just injury at this point. I know that there's a bit of a dysfunction in Edmonton. I'd like to think that a little bit of that is kind of gone. They've actually increased their support cast, so there's actually a lot more skill in the lineup now than there was over at least the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, it's McDavid by a mile.
Before we get to the next player, I just want to formally thank you because we haven't had you on since you got your new job with the Owen Sound Attack. So congratulations on that, Gus. Very well deserved. I want to ask you about Claude Giroux. Giroux's a guy that I've been a big fan of for a long time. And, you know, he, as you know, he had the dip from the 102-point season. He went down to 85 points. How many points are you projecting for Giroux? Is it going to be somewhere between 85 and 102 points? And, you know, even though we're talking about traditional formats, how important is it for a guy like Giroux who's dual eligible to take him?
Yeah, see, that dual eligibility kind of, I mean, when you're looking from straight production, that's one thing. But if you really are dependent on having a specific position designation, this is a real big, it's a big step. To me, I think it can elevate a player from one tier to another, even if they don't necessarily, if you're, let's just say you're breaking tiers down by 5 points, it can move a player from one tier to another. However, that extra designation, it allows you the flexibility to be able to kind of move in and out of a roster. For straight point pools and things where you're just accumulating points, I don't think it makes much of a difference. To me, I think it really takes effect when you're going into a good fantasy pool where you're a rotisserie league where you're actually trying to gain points from individual categories or head-to-head against somebody else. That's when those designations really, really take effect. For Claude Giroux, I think that 102 points was a bit of an outlier. Last year, he kind of went more or less to what his career averages were. And I would kind of expect the same. I think that Philadelphia is in that range, but he's not going to hit that 100 points at this point in time. So I would expect anywhere in the mid-80s for Claude Giroux, and I think that would be a fantastic season for him.
You know, Gus, David Pastrnak had 81 points in 66 games last season. Do you see him hitting the 100-point mark this year?
you know, if he's steady with Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand, who both themselves can really put up the points, then yeah, absolutely. I think the only thing that would keep him from getting 100 points is if he's dropped down the lineup, because Boston does have some questions entering the season, and I think that they might adjust some tactical elements in order to accommodate some inefficiencies that might have on the blue line. If that's really the case, I mean, from 100 points, is anybody really going to be disappointed if he just breaks 90?
That's a good floor to have, certainly. Gus Katsaros of McKean's Hockey is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Fantasy Preview Show. We're talking about forwards with Gus. Gus, Jamie Benn, you know, 79 points 2 years ago. Sky's the limit. Great top line player. Down to 53 points last year. Very disappointing season for Benn in Dallas. Where do you expect him to be, you know, in terms of point range this coming season?
I think Dallas in general has understood that they just can't rely on one specific line in order to generate all their scoring. And if that's the case and they pigeonhole their offense into their only stars, then they're going to have troubles. They went out and they grabbed Joe Pavelski. They're going to add depth. They have a bunch of depth that they can add some potential up there. So I think that Jamie Benn can be better than that 53 points, but I'm not really sure that he's that 79 or 80 point or that Art Ross trophy clearly in these days and ages. So anywhere in between the 60 to 65 points. The thing that I would expect more from Benn, though, is I would expect a lot more goals. So even if he does end up in that 60 to 65 range, I would expect him to at least flirt with 30 goals. And if he doesn't get it, then a high 20s, again, is a decent accomplishment.
Gus, Nikita Gusev is a player that I messaged you that I wanted to talk about. Obviously, he made big headlines. A lot of hockey fans didn't really know Gusev. He's never played in the NHL before, but the Devils acquired him from the Golden Knights, who, of course, were having those salary cap issues, and it looks like he's going to be penciled in on that second line there with Jack Hughes. What are realistic expectations for Gusev? Are we talking about 40 points, 50 points? Because a lot of Devils fans are really excited about his offensive upside.
Yeah, I'd be excited too if I had a player like that in my lineup. I mean, yeah, I know where they kind of figured to play him, but I could see him kind of moving up and down in the lineup, and he's pretty versatile in that regard. I would expect him to be about a half a point a game, a little bit better than half a point. So let's say the high 40s to the 50 points. I think 50 points is a good max, but I think he could be better than half a point and just a little... with a little bit of a push, and the Devils are going to be very exciting and entertaining to watch, and that's because they're going to increase that offensive element. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's in that high 40s range. I would be ecstatic if he actually breaks the 50-point barrier.
I guess looking at Alex Galchenyuk with the Penguins, how many points do you project for him playing with or without Evgeny Malkin?
Well, I think just on his own, if we just take the consideration of just Galchenyuk's talents alone, you could kind of create a baseline anywhere from 50 to 55 points. Let's say mid 55, just to keep it at a simple base. Playing with Malkin can potentially tip him over 60. And if Malkin, considering what has been said in the media recently, is really on his game and determined to be one of the most effective players on that team, Galchenyuk can even hit that mid 60s. With a lot of good luck and some pretty decent special teams, that's where I think that his potential from a max is. So if you're looking to get specifics, draft for 55 points, hope that he gets 65 points.
Gus Katsaros of McKean's Hockey is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our fantasy hockey preview show. We're talking about forwards with Gus. Gus, a forward last year on the Edmonton Oilers who had a career year was Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Of course, Edmonton last year, you know, another season where it was a bit of a gong show. This year, they hope that they have a little bit more credibility, a little bit more respectability. You bring in Ken Holland to steady the ship there. What do you see Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, you know, projecting at for this coming season?
So, again, under the assumption that Connor McDavid is fully healthy, then he should be that one player that should mark all the depth. So anytime that Connor McDavid isn't on the ice to be able to score, Nugent-Hopkins should be able to pick up the slack somewhere there. I don't know whether or not he's capable of repeating the career high, but I just can't see with, again, some structure and basic coordination going into the Edmonton Oilers, I could see him breaking that 60-point barrier. So 60 to 65 points isn't really out of the question. The only thing that can really hamper that is if he's placed into a role which is in a higher spot simply because of an injury to McDavid.
Oh, Gus, Nick Schmaltz is a player that I'm really curious to see what he does with the Arizona Coyotes, because as you know, when he went over to Arizona, he was almost a point per game player. It was 14 points in 17 games. A couple of years ago, he had that 20 goal season with the Blackhawks. Then obviously he was involved in that trade for Dylan Strome, which worked out quite nicely for the Blackhawks. But what are you projecting for Schmaltz, especially considering, you know, that he's going to get those power play opportunities and he has the ability to pass the puck to Phil Kessel, who we know is quite the sniper?
You know, from I wrote up the Arizona Coyotes, and I my eyes just kept lighting up every time I saw things. Essentially, to answer your question, what I'm going to tell you about Nick Schmaltz can be applied to a variety of Arizona forwards. While he while he had 14 points in 17 games, as you said, when he wasn't on the ice, they had the difficulty in generating a lot of scoring. So they had a whole bunch of injuries and they had to constantly replace players. So that chaos that they had up front should be completely gone. So I don't think that Schmaltz is a 14 point in 17 game player, but he is definitely a 55 to 60 point player. If Phil Kessel is on his game and he can add a little bit more, because that Arizona power play last year was just dreadful to the degree, and I love using this as an example, Derek Stepan had 3 power play points last year. Wow. 3. So just simple regression back to an average or a median there immediately raises everybody. So every single forward that plays on the power play for Arizona should be a viable candidate for any fantasy owner. So if Schmaltz isn't available and I would like him, Kessel isn't available and I definitely like him, you could pick anybody from Derek Stepan to and just go right down the list, and I think that you wouldn't really be disappointed.
Gus, almost as fun as winning a hockey pool is being able to say you called the sleeper, you called the breakout candidate. Couple, you know, last question for you. You know, who do you have as sort of a couple breakout candidates and maybe, you know, a sleeper and or a bust that you're avoiding and or targeting in your pools this year?
Well, I mean, we already talked about the ceiling and for Nick, for Gusev.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Nico Hischier is actually one of the players to look at for a breakout campaign. I have him kind of penciled in, and the Keens had him penciled in at around 67 points, which being an a Leaf fan growing up is a really terrible number to associate. So I'm going to bump that up, and I think that he can easily break that 70-point range. Health is the only thing between him, Taylor Hall, and all their stars that would probably keep him from 70 points. You can go very close and right across the river, and you could see Pavel Buchnevich in New York. I think that he's got the potential as long as he's given the opportunity to do so. And I think the last one is the one that gets the most opportunities, Tyler Bertuzzi in Detroit. If you give him the ability to play in those offensive situations, you might see a 55 to 60-point season, and under really good circumstances, even break that 60-point barrier.
Gus Katsaros is with McKean's Hockey. He joins us to talk about the fantasy hockey world. Gus, thanks so much for doing this. Always appreciate it. It's a great tradition we have going. Enjoy the season, buddy.
A pleasure is always mine. Thank you guys for having me back on.
Take care. There's Gus Katsaros. When we come back, we talk about fantasy hockey forwards. We give our insights into who you should be targeting and who you should be avoiding when it comes to your fantasy hockey draft. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Dennis steps up. Hands it off to Kucherov, splits to Bruins, cuts it along, scores! Nikita Kucherov, a beautiful goal to give him 41 of the season, and point number 127.
Kucherov finished with 128 points, setting the record for the most points in a season by a Russian hockey player. He obviously won the Art Ross Trophy last year, getting 12 more points than Connor McDavid, albeit in 4 more games than McDavid. But the question is, do you go Kucherov? Do you go McDavid? Who is your first overall pick in your upcoming fantasy hockey draft? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Reminder, the Bombers and the Montreal Alouettes, 3:00 is the start time of that game, but Blue and Gold Game Day gets underway at 1 p.m. this afternoon, so keep it locked and loaded here on your home of the Jets, your home for sports in Winnipeg, TSN Radio 1290, bombing Walby Westwood there in studio right after us to get you set for the Bombers and the Alouettes from Montreal. So, Ezzy, McDavid, Kucherov. We heard what Gus Katsaros said. He said, you know, don't overthink it. McDavid's the best player in the game. He's the best. He's going to be the guy who you should pick first overall more often, even though he finished behind Kucherov last year. Do you agree with that line of thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I think McDavid could probably hit 130 points this year. I really do believe that. I think the Oilers will be better. I don't know if they're going to be a playoff team, but guys, when you're talking about McDavid or Kucherov, it's pretty clear that those guys should go one and two in most traditional draft formats, right? Like, if you're talking about goals, then maybe you're talking about Alex Ovechkin. I mean, you would probably
draft
put
the rewards goals.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, if goals are worth two and assists are worth one, which is common. I'm in a pool that I've been in for many years where goals are worth two and assists are worth one. Mm-hmm. Then even you're throwing in Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah, 50 goal scorer.
Yeah, and you know, maybe Leon Draisaitl doesn't hit 50 again, but I'd be shocked if he doesn't hit 40 to 45. And again, I would probably expect him to be around 50 because he's that good. So yeah, I'm probably going Connor McDavid. I mean, it's going to be tough to replicate 128 points. Really, everything went well for Kucherov. But I mean, Kucherov, you should expect to be somewhere around, I think, 105 to 120 points. Maybe he even gets close to 128 again. But just based on his shooting percentage and, you know, his past statistics, I just wouldn't expect him to necessarily get back to 128. But if I'm picking first, I'll take McDavid.
Yeah, I mean, I think you don't overthink it. It's sort of going back to the, you know, when Gretzky was in his heyday. You don't overthink it. I mean, Gretzky obviously was an exception because, you know, there were pools where you weren't allowed to take Gretzky because it was almost unfair to take him just by getting first overall. But I think that you don't overthink it. You take McDavid, and then if you're sitting second overall, you're happy. Hey, I'll take Kucherov. Whoever falls to me, I'm going to take that guy, and I'm not going to think twice about it.
And then third and fourth gets a little bit more complicated, right?
Absolutely.
Because then are you going with Sidney Crosby? Are you going with Patrick Kane? I mean,
Nathan McKinnon
is in the conversation. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot more questions when you get to number three, number four. It's not as certain as number one and number two, but I'd probably go Patrick Kane number three. But when you're talking about one and two, you got to take one of those two guys.
I think it's like you said, Ezzy, I think the key really depends on what your draft is. If your draft is rewarding goals versus points, then it has to become a little more nuanced. If it's simply straight points, goals and assists are the exact same, then you have to just draft obviously for the best player. And I mean, Connor McDavid is still the best player in the NHL. So, I mean, Connor McDavid, in my mind, would be your first overall pick.
Where do you take those guys who are a bit risky?
Okay, so, and that's what I wanted to get into here, Drew, because I think, you know, we've been doing hockey pools for, what, 20 years now. I hold my own hockey pool every year, and I go in another hockey pool. But
people were asking me about when your date is going to come out for your hockey pool.
It's a little trickier to figure it out with two kids, but
priorities, Ezra.
Yeah,
hockey pools, priorities.
Don't worry, Drew. We'll do a pool this year. But, you know, the reality is, I mean, it's really tough to win your hockey pool every year. I mean, some people win a pool, and then maybe they finish last the next year. It's tough, right, because there are injuries and all that. So what I've done is put together every year kind of my strategies, but what I want to do when we're talking about forwards, what I think you have to focus on is drafting forwards who give you consistent, reliable production and stay healthy. So obviously
risk averse is what you would say.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody wants to take this year's Braden Point, right? Braden Point went from 66 points 2 years ago to 92 points. Yeah. And I think maybe the greatest candidate to do that this year is probably Timo Meier. And because Mike Kelly was talking about him on NHL Network and TSN.ca, but because Joe Pavelski's not there and Timo Meier, you know, is I think he still hasn't scratched the surface. I think Timo Meier is a great 80 to 90 point candidate, but I don't want to focus on those breakout candidates. I picked three guys who, if you look at their stats over the last 5 years, they're almost guaranteed to be in a certain range. And thanks to our friends at HockeyDB for all these numbers. So I've picked three guys. Okay. The first guy is the reigning Conn Smythe Trophy winner, Ryan O'Reilly. If you look at his last 5 years, he's averaged 58 points. So you're talking about 55, 60, 55, 61. Last year was his career high, 77. So most likely, you know, he's going to be somewhere between 65 and 75 points. So you want to take these guys. And if you look at the amount of games that he's played.
Well, hang on.
He's only missed, I think, something like 13 games over the last 5 years. So the reality is you're taking a player that you know is going to be somewhere between 60 and 75 points. And you know that most likely because of how he takes care of himself, he's not going to miss a lot of hockey games.
But 60 to 75 points, you know, to play the devil's advocate a little bit here, is a pretty good range. You know, that's the difference between taking a guy, say, maybe that you should have taken in the third round versus a guy you should have taken in the fifth round if he's at the 60 points. point mark, somewhere around there. I mean, he had 77 last year, and you mentioned he was the Conn Smythe winner last year for when the Blues won the Stanley Cup.
And he played a lot of hockey. He played over 100 games, so you want to factor that in. I would expect his numbers to drop off a little bit, but I don't think he's going to be a 50-point player. Like, if I had to put money on it, I'd probably say he's going to be around 65 points. But we're talking about guys that are more in the mid rounds. Like, if you're in a traditional, like, let's say 10 or 12 team pool where you take, you know, 10 forwards or 12 forwards, he's probably going to be more of like a fifth round pick, a sixth round pick, but he's going to be a really good fifth round pick where you don't have to worry about, you know, how well is he going to do. But I want to quickly get through here because I know Dave wants to get in on some other forwards, but Sean Monahan is another guy. He had a career high 82 points last year, but if you look at his seasons before that, 62, 63, 58, 64, 27 goals, 31 goals, 27 goals, 34 goals. He averages 61 points and he's only missed 14 games over 5 years. So a guy like Monahan, you're not going to take him in the first round. You're not going to take him in the second round, but for a fourth round or fifth round pick, you know, most likely he's going to be around 60 to 65 points. Maybe he even gets closer to 80 like he did last year. So one other guy, and this guy would be taken a little bit higher, Nicholas Backstrom. And the reason why I think this is important, guys, is because everybody wants to know, who do I take that's going to have a crazy year? Well, the way you win hockey pools is by taking a sure thing and knowing that that guy's going to be good for at least 70 or 80 points. And that guy is Nicholas Backstrom. If you look at his totals over the years, and it's remarkable, he's only missed 10 games in the last 5 years. 78 points, 70 points, 86 points, 71 points, 74 points. He's averaged 76 points a year. So again, you're not going to take him in the first or second round. He's probably more like a third rounder. But because he doesn't miss any hockey, and he also happens to be a pending UFA, I mean, you know, okay, I got Backstrom. I mean, he's a second line center for the Washington Capitals.
And motivated.
And he's motivated, and he's going to be guaranteed to be somewhere around 70 to 80 points. So basically, you just lock it in, and you don't have to worry about that. I think where people sometimes go wrong in hockey pools is where they take a reach or they take a guy that has an injury history. I mean, like a guy like Evgeny Malkin is a guy that I think is going to have a better year this year, but he's a guy that has an injury history.
Well, you speak about guys who have injury histories, and quickly, I just want to say a guy that I'd be targeting despite his injury history, and I know there's a little bit of a risk involved in it, but I think the reward is overwhelming.
Taylor Hall.
Auston Matthews. Ooh. Taylor Hall's a good one, too.
I like Taylor Hall.
Taylor Hall last year, I mean, he only played, 30 games?
33 games.
33 games, and yeah. I mean, he was well over, and I think he was over a point a game in those
37.
30, yeah. But Auston Matthews to me is a guy who's, you know, ready to just absolutely break out if he's able to stay healthy with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I wouldn't be surprised if he hits 100.
That's what I'm saying. This is a guy who could hit 100 points, Auston Matthews, and, you know, he's a little bit lower on your points list because of the injuries last year. Mm-hmm. But if he's sitting there and you're late in the first round and you want somebody who can be a top five player and you're maybe taking it 10th, 11th, 12th, Auston Matthews is my guy.
The biggest wild card might be Claude Giroux. Because he's so all over the place. You know, I mean, you could have an amazing season with him, or you could have an average season. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him.
When we come back, we continue our fantasy hockey discussion by looking at the men on the back end with Pete Jensen, senior fantasy editor of NHL.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Pete Jensen of NHL.com. He joins us to talk about fantasy hockey defensemen. Pete is the senior fantasy editor of NHL.com, to be perfectly accurate. Pete, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, anytime, and great to be a part of the annual fantasy special on your show. You guys do great stuff, and I look forward to it every year.
Appreciate that, Pete. Obviously brought you on, as we mentioned, to talk about defense. And when you're talking about defensemen, you're really sort of starting with Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns. You know, if you wanted to take a defenseman, not obviously first overall, but who should be the first defenseman off the board in your mind?
This is a hot debate between me and my colleague Rob Reese. You can catch a lot of our debates on NHL Fantasy on Ice, our new podcast, but this is one that we disagree on. Clearly, Erik Karlsson has a very high ceiling if and when he's healthy. That said, I look at Brent Burns, even with his, you know, his age is getting up there, but it's almost like he's getting better with age. Last year, Carlson missed time. Burns scored 83 points in 82 games. No defenseman has done that since, I believe, Brian Leetch in the mid-90s. So this is what he's capable of if Carlson missed his time. If Carlson plays, they've proven that they can coexist on separate pairs at even strength and either together or separately on the power play. So I have absolutely no worries about Brent Burns. He never misses a game since he's moved back to defense 2014-15. He's had at least 60 points each of those seasons on D. He's had 300-plus shots each of the past four seasons. He's a power play beast. Brent Burns is my number one, and I have no hesitation saying that.
Pete, we wanted to ask you about John Klingberg because obviously a lot of people are looking at the Dallas Stars and the offseason moves they made acquiring Joe Pavelski and Corey Perry to a lesser degree, but I think a lot of people are expecting the Dallas Stars to score a lot of goals. So when you're talking about John Klingberg, we could obviously ask you about Miro Heiskanen as well because the ceiling, I think you would agree, is very high for him as well. But, you know, Klingberg missed some games last year, still had 45 points in 64 games. His career high was 67 from a couple of years ago. Are you expecting Klingberg to kind of get around that 65 to 70 point range if he's healthy the whole year?
So we have, our conservative estimates, safe estimates for our point projections have him, I believe it's 68 points, third among defensemen. So we're very high on Klingberg this year. I know Heiskanen is going to be coming on strong, pushing for bigger minutes. If Klingberg goes down like he did last year, Miro Heiskanen in his second season is probably going to fare even better offensively and could maybe cut into Klingberg's time moving forward, but that's a hypothetical. I like Klingberg to beat his career high in points, which I believe is 67. We have him for 68. I think it's realistic. With a power play unit that is now complete, a top six unit that is now complete for Dallas after the Pavelski addition, the emergence of Roope Hintz. You know, you're still talking about so many elite options, no matter how they configure their lines. And with that Pavelski net front presence, you can bet that he's going to be tapping pucks in off the shots from the point from John Klingberg all day long, all season long. So Klingberg, feast your eyes on this guy. You can get him in most leagues in the fourth round, and I take him in a lot of mock drafts in that spot. Very high on Klingberg.
You know, Pete, over in Toronto, Morgan Riley's had quite a jump, went up by 20 points last season to 72, which was a career high for him. Do you see a little bit of a drop-off, though, with Tyson Barrie now in with the Leafs?
It remains to be seen. I mean, they have ceiling, those two, especially because they could play together at even strength and on the power play. Like, Toronto has guys like Jake Muzzin behind them on a separate pair, Cody Ceci, guys like that. So they have some insurance. They can afford to stack those two guys, maybe even on power play one with Matthews, Tavares, Marner. I mean, sign me up for the upside of either of those two guys. That said, if Barry takes over power play one for Morgan Riley, who's a much better, well-rounded defenseman than Barry, in my opinion, you could see a dip for sure for Morgan Riley. He was one of three with 70-plus points last year. I believe we have him for 60. That's a safe estimate. Probably coming down compared to last season, even with the offense being so potent in Toronto. Just too many mouths to feed, too many cooks in the kitchen, that type of thing.
Pete Jensen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about fantasy hockey defensemen. Pete is the senior fantasy hockey editor with NHL.com. You know, Seth Jones is a fascinating case there in Columbus. He only had 46 points last year in 75 games, which is down from the 57 points he had a year earlier. What are your expectations for Seth Jones this season in a completely reformatted, retooled Columbus Blue Jackets lineup? Do you see him more at that 45 mark, or do you see him going up to that 55, 60 mark? Where he was a couple seasons ago?
We have him for 55, which is right around the range of Thomas Chabot, Rasmus Dahlin, Erik Gustafsson. Seth Jones is going to be relied on heavily, I think, this year. And he's one of the only guys on Columbus that I think gains value from the departure of Panarin, from the departure of Matt Duchene, because he is going to be relied on so heavily for offense from the back end out to try to keep that team competitive. And he's going to do well defensively as well. So he, even if the Blue Jackets take a step back by like 10 wins compared to last year, they're going to be competitive on a night-to-night basis because of the two-way play of Seth Jones. So I think he'll be a responsible defenseman as he is another year older, but in the prime of his career without a doubt. And he's going to take over. I mean, I think it's realistic. I mean, Cam Atkinson is an elite goal scorer. He'll probably have more points than Seth Jones, but I wouldn't be surprised if Seth Jones was maybe the second leading scorer on the Blue Jackets, including forwards, which would be crazy, but not shocking in the least.
Now, Pete, for those poolies who are in pools that require you to take defensemen, I think a lot of people are going to look at last year's numbers and they're going to see Mark Giordano, obviously, you know, close to the top, or right at the top, actually, with 74 right. points, which was a career year for him. But, you know, we're used to seeing him more in kind of the 35 to 50 point range. What are your thoughts on Giordano? Because obviously he's passing the puck to a lot of good players there. Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Matthew Tkachuk, to name a few. But are you expecting Giordano to regress? Not saying that he's going to, you know, have a terrible year, but are you expecting him to maybe be closer to that 50-point range?
Yeah, Giordano's not a guy that I would take in the top 50 overall, even though his performance last season indicates he's worthy of a selection in that range. We have him for 62, which is right around Roman Josi. I'd be more inclined to reach for a Roman Josi, who's in a contract year. Subban's gone. Has a chance for a big uptick and a career high in points, whereas Giordano, I believe, is going to turn 36 in early October, so that's a concern. I know Brent Burns is older too, but look at the security blanket of that team. They can let him run wild. They still have Carlson. They still have Vlasic. Giordano is kind of a one-man show. I don't really trust Calgary's goaltending very much with Cam Talbot and David Rittich. I think that could be the weak point that maybe turns them from a surprise team that won the Western Conference to a team that maybe could miss the playoffs. It wouldn't be too shocking to me if that happens. And if it turns, if the tables turn on the Flames and their offense dries up a little bit and the goaltending is not reliable, Giordano is the guy that they're going to turn to play more minutes maybe than he's able to at his age. And he's going to be the guy that is responsible for their defensive issues and lapses. So I don't really like that from Giordano's standpoint, but still, great chance at 60-plus points for the veteran.
You know, Pete, over in Colorado, they have a young rookie who's a favorite for the Calder Trophy this year in Cale Makar. What are realistic point expectations for him this season?
We have him for 49, but that total could be much higher. It's really exciting to me that they traded Tyson Barrie. Barrie was really productive for them, one of the best power play and regular point defensemen over the past 5 years for the Avalanche. But, you know, Cale Makar, we saw just a glimpse of it. He didn't even know the defensive sets. I mean, he was thrown into the fire. He was running on fumes after playing a lengthy college season last year. Scored 6 in 10 games in the playoffs against some tough teams and only played 17 minutes a night. Now with Barrie gone, he's going to play probably 22, 23 per game easily, maybe more if Colorado relies on him more heavily. But most importantly, power play one usage with, like I was mentioning with Dallas, now a complete five-man unit with Makar most likely, Nazem Kadri, who came over in the Barrie trade, and then, of course, the big three, Rantanen, if and when he signs, MacKinnon, and Landeskog. So I love that five-man unit, and it includes Makar, which gives Makar a chance to win the Calder Trophy as a defenseman, which is so tough to do. But if he drops 55, 60 points, he will win the Calder Trophy without a doubt.
Pete Jensen is the senior fantasy hockey editor for NHL.com. He joins us on the line. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290.
Pete, there's one more defenseman that we want to ask you about, and then we want to get sure. you get some breakout candidates, you know, two or three or four breakout D candidates. You know, Keith Yandle is a guy that had an excellent season last year for the Florida Panthers. I believe he was fifth overall amongst defensemen. He had 62 points, and obviously Keith Yandle's not a guy that's going to score a lot of goals. He's not going to score 20 goals or anything close to that, but if you look at power play assists, he had more power play assists than any other defenseman in the league. Do you think he gets enough respect for how good of a fantasy defenseman he is, and how many points are you projecting for Yandle this year?
I don't think he gets enough respect, and that team could get a whole lot better after the addition of Bobrovsky, Joel Quenneville. I expect an uptick, potentially a breakout season from Aaron Ekblad, who's never even scored 40 points in his career, former number one pick. That's hard to believe. I think he's going to have an uptick, but yeah, Yandle is the sauce on that power play with Huberto, Barkov, some potent players, Mike Hoffman and Keith Yandle. Go look at the league leaders in power play points last year. I think they were both in the top five. 99% of NHL fans wouldn't know that just because those guys don't get enough respect, as you mentioned. So Florida's power play could be just as good. They could be better at even strength with Vincent Trocheck. And Keith Yandle is going to feast on the opposition on a game-to-game basis. Even if Ekblad gets more usage at even strength, Yandle has that power play role locked down.
Last one for you, Pete. We all want to know who the sleepers are and who the busts are. Who are you keeping an eye on as guys you think are going to have tremendous years and guys who you might think might take a step back?
I mean, I think Rasmus Dahlin. I watched him the other day. I know he's an obvious breakout candidate, but I watched him the other day against the Penguins in the preseason opener. This guy turns corners like few other defensemen in the league, and he's still so young. I think especially if Ristolainen is traded, which still, I guess, could happen, the Sabres are much stronger on the right side than they've been for the better part of the past decade. So Rasmus Dahlin, expect a big jump. I expect Oliver Ekman-Larsson to bounce back for at least 50 points, and the Coyotes have a great chance at the postseason. Another breakout candidate, Shea Theodore for Vegas. He's been through a lot on and off the ice the past couple of years, but he has a chance. If he's playing like he did in the playoffs on that power play one, new look power play one as of last postseason with Stone, Pacioretty, and Stasny, and Alex Tuch, that could be one of the better units that no one's really talking about around the league. Don't forget about Josh Morrissey. I know he's from your guys' neck of the woods, but with this Bufflin situation and Myers and Trouba out the door, I really like Josh Morrissey even more. I've taken him in almost every mock draft. And then a couple other names. Filip Hronek played really well at the World Championship for Detroit, for Czech Republic, and then was really good down the stretch for Detroit Red Wings as well. And then Devon Taves. Islanders have a new power play coach in the fold. They have Matthew Barzal in a contract year, potential 2020 RFA. Jordan Eberle's back. Anders Lee is back. Some nice talent there that people are going to sleep on for the second consecutive season. They were terrible on the power play last year, but Taves played on power play one in the playoffs, looked really good, 4 power play points in 2 series, so don't sleep on him.
There you go, some deep sleepers and some guys who are got an upward trajectory from Pete Jensen, senior fantasy hockey editor of NHL.com. Pete, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me. And again, everybody hit me up with questions around your drafts and check out the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. We're, we've been ramping it up here in the preseason, so we appreciate anybody who's listening.
There you go. Thanks so much, Pete. When we come back, we talk about fantasy defensemen from our perspective. The Fantasy Hockey Preview Show continues as part of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's tough to argue. He's been leading the National Hockey League year in, year out, as far as offensively from a statistical standpoint. He's big. He's gnarly. He's a guy that is a dynamic player that changes the game in a split second.
He, in that instance, is Brent Burns of the San Jose Sharks. Led the NHL last season with 83 points in 82 games played. Tops among defensemen.
Don't forget about the analysis. It's Kenny Danico.
No, I know it's Kenny Danico. I'm just saying that he... Thank you.
Not only did he wear number 3, but he's got 3 Stanley Cup rings.
And he's number 1 in your heart still.
Well, he's up in the rafters. Nobody's going to wear that number for the Devils, so better give him his props, Drew.
Hey, Ken is a frequent guest on this program. He's a great guy.
He's a great guest. I actually really enjoy having Kenny on.
Yeah, exactly. So that was Ken Danico giving his analysis on Brent Burns, who, of course, as I said,
and he doesn't like your question. He beats you up.
That's, you can't go wrong at that point in time. Led the NHL last year. You know, Brent Burns obviously gets a little bit of grief for what he gives back on the defensive side of the game. But when it comes to fantasy hockey, there is no equal. I mean, to my perspective, when we asked Pete Jensen about it, you know, is it Erik Karlsson, obviously coming off a banged up season? Is it Brent Burns as the guys you're going to be taking first overall if you have to take defenseman or when you want to take a defenseman? To me, there's no question. It's Brent Burns. He does it game in, game out, season in, season out. He's the top fantasy hockey defenseman, strictly based on the points he puts up.
Yeah, you know I'm a huge fan of Brent Burns, and I think you have to factor in the injury concerns, all right? Like, if Erik Karlsson plays 65 games, which is a nice number because that's his number, but when you're talking about, you know, Karlsson, it's unlikely that he plays a full season. And you just look at his numbers over the years. He's missed a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Brent Burns is more likely to play a full season. So that's why, to me, Burns gets the slight nod over Karlsson, guys. But if you're in a pool where you have to grab a defenseman,
yeah.
I mean, you can't really go wrong with Karlsson. His
record,
career
I think,
numbers...
I think you should make that change for your pool. I think you should have to grab some number of defensemen for your pool.
Well, the way I work with my pool is if, you know, I'm a Democratic person. If everybody is for it, that's what I usually do. I mean, that's why when we draft, sometimes we draft 12 players, sometimes we draft 10 or 14. So I have no problem with that. But when you're talking about defensemen, the one guy who has to also be in that conversation is obviously Victor Hedman. But I think Seth Jones is another guy. I think a lot of people are saying, well, you know, Artemi Panarin's not there and, you know, Matt Duchene isn't there, albeit, you know, Duchene was only there after the trade deadline. But, you know, Seth Jones to me is a top five, maybe even top three defenseman. So I think after you're talking Hedman, Karlsson, and Burns, kind of the top tier.
Yeah.
I think Jones is has to be the fourth, fifth, sixth defenseman you're taking, because I expect him, if he's healthy, to be right around kind of 55 to 60 points.
Well, we talked about consistency, and we talked about that as it comes to forwards. And, you know, defensemen, I think it's almost even more important, because there are, you know, there's such a range of results that you can get for a defenseman, especially if they have a down year and they're, you know, and you're not expecting, you know, you never know what you're going to get with a defenseman.
Defensemen are very tricky to predict.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Letang is a guy who never gets the respect that he deserves. I mean, you ask Pete Jensen.
He's the Rodney Dangerfield of hockey.
Well, there you go. I mean, Chris Letang, when he's healthy, is one of the best point-producing defensemen in the league, and he's still playing. You know, people are sort of writing off the Penguins or saying that the Penguins' window is closed. I don't know. Anytime you're still playing with Sidney Crosby and you're playing with Evgeny Malkin, you can't say that, you know, offensively their window is closed. I mean, Chris Letang is going to quarterback a power play that's got great scores on it. Letang to me is a guy that you can get later in your draft. That's not going to cost you an early pick, but he's going to put up consistent numbers for you.
Well, one guy I like, and I honestly love watching him play hockey, is Roman Josi.
Sure,
I think he's just got such good hockey skills. And every time I think of about Roman Josi, I literally flash back to a game I was watching in Nashville, Chicago game. Don't ask me why. This is a few years back, and he danced around from the Predator zone into the Hawks and scored. And I just thought to myself, this guy he's dynamic and he's consistent. In the last 5 years, he's had almost a 50-plus season. He had one 49-point season, mm-hmm. and he had one 61-point season. Three of the five, he's had over 55 points. So to me, he's a guy who's going to get you that 55 to 60 points. He's a real smart player. He's a real consistent player. Doesn't miss a lot of games. So I think if you're looking for a consistent producer, Roman Josi is the guy you might want to look at.
Yeah, and, you know, sticking with that former Predator PK Subban, I think with defensemen, that's where you really get a lot of value, because, you know, PK Subban had the 31 points last year. He missed roughly 20 games. But when you're talking about PK, you know, he's usually around that 50 to 60 point range, right? So for me, you know, PK Subban, you could get him really late in a pool. Like, if you're in a pool where there's 12 or 14 rounds and you have to take a defenseman, or if you have to take a couple of defensemen, and PK Subban is a guy who, you know, most people think, oh, well, you know, he's washed up, but look who he's going to be playing with. He's going to be passing the puck to Nico Hischier, Taylor Hall, Jack Hughes. He's going to be playing, if not on the first power play unit, he's going to be playing on the second power play unit. So PK Subban is a guy, and, you know, I don't know if Pete Jensen mentioned him, but I'll throw him out there. When we were talking about Florida, I think Aaron Ekblad's numbers are going to jump up as well. Aaron Ekblad's didn't have a bad season last year. I think he was around 35 points. Yeah. I don't have it in front of me now, but I could see him being more like close to 50 points this year.
Well, and one last one for me is a guy here right here in Winnipeg is Josh Morrissey. I mean,
mentioned him, yeah.
But I'm saying with opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, the reality is depending on what happens with the power play, if Neil Pionk ends up being the QB versus Morrissey, but we saw what Morrissey can do on the power play in the game against was the second game.
Minnesota.
Minnesota. So, he's a smart kid. He had 31 points in 59 games last year, which was a career high. He, probably hits that 35 to 40 point season if he plays the full year last year. My guess is Josh Morrissey's a guy, especially with that opportunity. If there's no Bufflin, he's a guy you're probably going to see a pretty big jump.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. If Morrissey's healthy, you got to think that he's going to be around the 50-point mm-hmm. range, maybe even higher. Maybe he gets to around 55. But mm-hmm. Ekblad actually had 37 points last year, so I was close. But the thing with Ekblad, too, is he hasn't missed a game in the last 2 years. And I know if you've been listening to the show, I kind of harp on that. But for me, you really do want to take players that have a history mm-hmm. of playing the majority of games, because then there aren't question marks. And, we mentioned Erik Karlsson. I mean, you go back 3, 4, 5 years, Erik Karlsson was playing full 81, 82-game seasons. But you have to factor that groin injury in, because even though he put up really good offensive numbers in the playoffs, he's basically, it was a half Erik Karlsson.
Yeah, he was doing it on one leg for a lot of the year.
That's all I'm saying. You can't necessarily expect him to play all 82 games and put up, 75 points or whatever, but most likely you're taking him as either the first, second, or third defenseman just because he's that talented. So defenseman a little bit harder to project, but, hopefully you don't have to take them, because the pools that I'm in don't. One of them requires you to take defensemen.
I think it's more. I think there's more skill involved.
It's a lot tougher. Once you get out of the top 10, top 15 in the pool that I'm in, you have to take a minimum of 4 defensemen. So after 15 or 20 defensemen are off the board,
you're throwing darts.
Yeah, you're talking more about kind of like 35 to 45 point guys, and then you throw in injuries, and it's a lot harder to predict. But some of the guys, hopefully, that we've mentioned are guys that you can snag in your pool.
Exactly right. When we come back, we shift our focus to goaltending. Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us to talk about goaltenders. The Fantasy Hockey Preview Show continues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our Fantasy Hockey Preview Show continues.
It is flying by.
It is a Saturday morning, a little past 11:30 in the morning. This segment of the program is brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. There's 2 shows to see Adam Newman. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. They're going quickly, so get them now. Rumorscomedyclub.com.
Newman.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Kevin Woodley joins us to talk about fantasy hockey goaltenders. Kevin, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. I'm happy to join you. I feel like there should be a caveat attached to me talking about... I'll talk about goalies, but anytime you throw the word fantasy in front of it, I think it's necessary for me to let your listeners know that in my longest standing hockey pool, dating way back to university days, and I'm in my mid-40s, we're talking a couple decades, my handle is the Donator.
You should know better than to take the Oilers goaltenders.
From here on out, with a rather large grain of salt.
Fair enough. We'll keep that in mind. But you do know your goaltending. You can break down goaltending and keep a good eye on who the quality goaltenders are. You just may not be able to select them. But we'll chalk that up to you having a bad draft position, right?
Yeah, we could do that. You know what I usually do? I usually think I'm smarter than everyone else, so they all pick goalies early, because obviously goalies get tons of points, wins, especially we had a 5-point per shutout league.
Wow.
And I always think, I can sneak a guy in the last round because I know better and I don't have to pick the obvious names. And actually, it's usually my other stuff that screws me as opposed to the goalie itself.
Well, you should know better than to taking Mikko Koskinen, but lessons learned. Kevin,
hey, not even I am that bad.
Kevin, Andre Vasilevsky seems like he should be the first goalie chosen. He gets a ton of wins, plays a ton of games for the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're obviously one of, if not the best team in the NHL, certainly were in the regular season last year. Wins, shutouts, he's got the total package. If you were choosing a goalie first, would it be Vasilevsky?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, absolutely it would be. He is him and Carey Price are the two best goaltenders in the National Hockey League right now. I really believe that. And actually, those are probably, based on the analytics, some of the proprietary stuff I had access to last year, they both should have been sort of 1 and 2 in Vezina finalist voting, and Carey actually should have edged him. But the difference is Andre plays on a great team. And so your win totals are going to be really high. Like, he's an incredible goalie on a really good team. They give up a ton of chances, but it doesn't matter because they outscore them and he stops them. So the only downside with Vasilevskiy is looks like a pretty concerted effort. Anytime you're willing to actually, you know, Louis Domingue won 11 in a row last year from a franchise record and he just cleared waivers. Anytime you're willing to move on a guy like that, to bring in a guy like Curtis McIlhenny, who has established himself as sort of, you know, your perfect backup role guy over the past couple seasons, it's pretty clear you're trying to reduce a workload here. You want a guy that you have confidence in. So I don't expect them to play him, to ride him as hard as maybe they have in the past. But let's be honest, guys, like that's a trend around the league. So we're not going to see 70-game goalies anymore. So the fact that Vasilevskiy might have his workload drop probably shouldn't be alarming. You just look at the fact he still is, you know, one of the top two goalies in the league on the best team in the league, and he makes sense to be the first goalie off the board in every draft.
Kevin, Jordan Binnington obviously was one of the best stories last year. He almost won the Conn Smythe Trophy, and you know, his rise up from the American Hockey League to the NHL and basically saving the Blues season is famous at this point. When you talk about expectations for this year, what are you expecting out of him for starts? Are you expecting kind of around the 50-60 range there with Jake Allen as the backup? And the Stanley Cup hangover is talked about a lot, but when you're talking about fantasy specifically, because this is the fantasy part of the show, should you be hesitant to draft him because maybe of the amount of hockey that he played, you know, in April and May?
A little less worried about the amount of hockey he played in terms of a hangover. Know the coaches that work with him in the summer, and I actually expect he could take another step. There are elements in his game that, I don't want to say exposed, that would be an overstatement, but we're certainly targeted at times successfully in the playoffs, and that's what happens when you go on a Stanley Cup run. Teams break your game down like never before, especially for a guy, you know, that there wasn't a lot of NHL film on until halfway through last season. And, you know, some of the post-play, post-integration, low-high attacks and the way he handled them, you know, they cost him some goals in the postseason. And he finished, you know, Cup champion, but you know, not with numbers that were at the level we even became accustomed to in the second half of the regular season. So I actually think he'll be better. I said early in his run, based on the changes he made with these goalie coaches, that I saw sustainability in his game. Like, I do not think he is a one-hit wonder. But when we talk about Stanley Cup hangovers, I think team effects could come into play. And as much as I like Binnington's game and think there is sustainability there for him long-term as an NHL goaltender, I worry about the environment defensively getting looser. That's usually one of the toughest things to maintain, especially coming off a cup win, especially for a team that defended as well as they did as a five-man unit for Craig Berube in the second half of the season and en route to a Stanley Cup. That requires sort of the work boots and a real commitment by every guy, and those are the type of things that can loosen up coming off a Stanley Cup. Not so much from necessarily playing too many games, although that has a factor, just more so climbing that mountain and having that sort of grinding mentality in your own end. You know, it's tough to maintain it in the regular season coming off that effort. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see his number slip, even if I thought his game was getting better. The two things can coexist, and that might be something that you see with Jordan Binnington this year. I think he's the real deal. I just don't know if their expectations for the Blues, given they just won the Cup, might need to be taken down a notch, especially in their own end.
Kevin, the Panthers made a big move getting Sergei Bobrovsky and signing him to that big deal. Do you expect him to play that 60 to 65 game, you know, number of games? But or are you thinking this idea of load management and they'll start to decrease it maybe simply just to keep him fresh for the potentially the playoffs?
Well, I said earlier that, you know, having Andrei Vasilevskiy's starts drop this year likely shouldn't worry people because every other goalie starts are going to drop this year as well. And I probably should have said there are two caveats to that. One is Frederik Andersen in Toronto because Mike Babcock doesn't ever seem to trust his backup goaltender and doesn't seem to think that running his starter into the ground is a problem. And two is Sergei Bobrovsky in Florida, not just because he can handle it. We had an article at InGoalMag.com. Cat Silverman did a wonderful job of sort of I knew he'd changed his body in his off-season training. He lost 17 pounds of muscle 2 years ago and had written that story. But Cat did a great job of finding the two Finnish gentlemen that he'd worked with to totally revamp his off-season training and the way he prepares for games and the way he cools down after games in terms of there's some martial arts elements in there. He just changed it. He changed everything. And since then, he went from a guy who couldn't stay healthy, had groin problems out the yin-yang, for lack of a better term, no pun intended, 62 missed games over 3 seasons before that change, not a single one to a lower body injury in the 3 years since. So I think he can be a workhorse goaltender. Anybody that worried about the term of the contract, his age and his injury history wasn't paying attention to those past 3 years. And the other thing is, guys, who's behind them? Like, you have to have 3 goalies to succeed in a National Hockey League season. I'm not convinced the Panthers have 2 that are NHL ready. I like Sam Montembeault, but I don't understand what their rush is to put him in an NHL situation. They don't really have a solid 3rd option there, and I think they're going to be forced to play the crap out of Bobrovsky. I think he can handle it. I don't think it's a great idea, much like Freddie Anderson, because you do eventually wear them down. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Sergei Bobrovsky lead the league in starts this year. And given what I think of him as a goaltender and given what I think of Joel Quenneville as a coach for goaltenders specifically, he'd be pretty – it's a bit risky because we haven't seen him behind that new team and there's always an adjustment period, but he'd definitely be high on my draft board.
Well, Kevin, the Golden Knights just placed Garrett Sparks on waivers, so maybe the Panthers can pick him up.
They are a team that needs to pick, in my opinion. The problem is I don't think they share this opinion. As teams try and sneak guys through early, the Maple Leafs made the cardinal sin of waiting late to try and get 2 through last year and watch them both leave. It makes no sense. If you want a guy in your system and you want to sneak him down in the minors, as a goaltender, you do it early before teams inevitably run into little tweaks that would cause them to pick it up. In Florida's case, I like Montembeault. I just think that you have another year before he requires waivers. Use it. Use it like the Nashville Predators did with UC Saros. Use it like the New York Rangers did with Alexander Georgiev, where for that one last season where he has that option, you send him back and forth during the year. Allow him be around the big team, even be the backup on a full-time basis. But if you go into a weekend where you know your starter's starting and you know where your AHL team has 3-3, you send your young backup who hasn't played in 2 weeks, you send him down to the minors, let him play 2 of those 3 games, and you call up some veteran to sit on the bench. Like, to me, that's what the Panthers should be doing here. Just throwing Montembeault in there and having him sit and watch Sergei Bobrovsky on an ongoing basis makes no sense, and yet, as of now, they don't really have a number 3 that allows them to do that. So I do think they should claim a guy. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't. Things like load management and that seem to escape this group.
Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com is our guest. We're talking about fantasy hockey goaltenders as part of our fantasy hockey preview show here on TSN Radio 1290. Kevin, Connor Hellebuyck here in Winnipeg obviously has the spotlight on him. People were disappointed in the season last year. What are your expectations for Hellebuyck this year, especially playing behind what is going to be a brand new defense, particularly so if Dustin Byfuglien chooses to not come back?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of Connor Hellebuyck. We've talked about it before. Been on the ice with him in the summer and seen, you know, the work he puts in to change his body 2 years ago and the work he's put in to change his game since. I talked a couple of years ago about how good they were in his Vezina finalist season at eliminating the lateral plays and really making the options simple for him, straight line attacks, and how that fit his game. I do think he's, and how I worried about what might happen if lateral attacks increased, or in Winnipeg, if there were more sort of those seam and lateral plays. I like the work he's done to improve that area of his game as well. I think he's ready for that. But I'm not sure what level it's going to be. Like, if they turn into the Oilers defensively, I don't care who's in net. Much like it doesn't matter who's in net in Edmonton. Like, if you play that way, it's going to be really tough on the goaltender. And, I mean, you guys would know better than me, to be honest, what that environment's going to be like, who's going to fill those spots. But right now, I would have to think the advice would be buyer beware, just because of not the goalie himself, but the environment that's going to be in front of him and all that turnover, you know, on defense, losing Myers, losing Trouba, and now especially if Byfuglien leaves as well.
Kevin, last question for you here. Colorado is obviously, you know, a sexy preseason pick to either be a Stanley Cup champion or go to the Stanley Cup final or maybe be, you know, the Central Division winner this year. So Philip Grubauer is a goaltender that a lot of people are looking at for, you know, potentially taking him in a fantasy draft. And, you know, he's never played more than 37 games in the season. He's never actually been, you know, considered the team's number one starter, of course, with Holtby there in Washington and then Varlamov last year in Colorado. Do you expect him to play somewhere around 55 to 60 games this year? And is it realistic to expect Grubauer, if everything goes well and he's healthy, could he put up 30 to 35 wins?
It's realistic to expect or to think that that should be the next step for him, but it's kind of one of those things, until you've done it, you haven't done it, and he hasn't done it, and he's been a second-half goaltender. Like, that opportunity was there. Last year I said buyer beware on him because I believe Semyon Varlamov was still, you know, had the ability to be an elite number one. And there's a guy who I expect to bounce back because of his environment with the Islanders. I still think he has all the tools to be a Vezina-type guy, and he's going to be in a perfect environment. So if you want to buy late guy, Varlamov would be mine. Grubauer, all the tools are there. I watch him play. There is nothing that should create the first half issues he seems to run into. Like, he should be able to play the way he does in the second half all year long. Technically, his game is strong. There's only a couple little hiccups in it, and they still exist, and he still has success with them in the second half of seasons and even into the playoffs. So, yeah, it should be a natural transition of being able to play the full year, and yet for some reason he wasn't able to do it last year. I think the opportunity, like, they're leaning on him to sort of have to make this step this year more because of the depth chart. But do not sleep on Pavel Frank, who's coming in as the backup. Like, he's a guy who's on a David Rittich sort of timeline. He might even be ahead of him, the way he came from the KHL and adjusted to the AHL. I expect him to, like, a lot of people look at him behind Grubauer and worry about Colorado's goaltending. I think Pavel Francouz is going to be just fine and could be a guy, if Grubauer struggles, that steals starts from him early. So I'd be a little bit nervous about Philip Grubauer locked in as a number one. I think you're probably going to end up closer to the 50-game range than the 55-60. But he has, like I said, he has the capability of being, you know, the number one start to finish. But when you haven't shown it, counting on it would be a mistake.
Kevin Woodley is with In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. He joins us as part of our fantasy hockey preview show talking about goaltenders. Kevin, always appreciate your time and insight. Great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, hey guys, and I'm sorry I talked too much to get through our full list.
It's all good.
Mrazek, be careful. Robin Lehner, he could have just as good a season in terms of performance, but his numbers could still be way down because the environment changes. And last but not least, Jacob Markstrom. There is a good sleeper for you. He could get to 60 games. He's actually going to take another step this year because of some of the things he did in the offseason. Last year wasn't a fluke. They're a better team, and I believe, as much as I hated on his game earlier in his career, he's made massive strides under Ian Clark, and he could be a guy that you grab late in the pool and really provides elite number one numbers for you.
There you have it. Kevin, I always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
When we come back, one final segment. We'll talk about goaltenders. We'll put a bow on our fantasy hockey preview show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The ultimate inconsistency, and you'd mentioned the last 3 years, 115 wins, and the last 2 years, 14 shutouts as well. So he has the ability to win a game on his own. He's helped by, and was helped by, a very competitive defending team in Columbus. But let's face it, he made momentum-grabbing saves. He's a lightning rod for viewers. When you watch Bobrovsky and you're not even a hockey fan, you say, who is that guy and what is he doing?
Sergei Bobrovsky, now of the Florida Panthers, certainly going to be a sought-after goaltender in your fantasy hockey drafts this coming season.
Bobrovsky should be, like, if he's not, I mean, Vasilevsky probably goes first, but he should probably be second or third.
Especially when you hear what Kevin Woodley has to say. Like, that's why having Kevin on is so good, because he can provide you with insight, because he sees how a lot of these guys train, and he knows he's in the know in that regard. So you really do learn quite a bit from talking to guys like
Nobody
that.
Can break down goaltenders, in my opinion, better than Kevin. And when you're talking about Bobrovsky, I mean, Hellebuck, nobody's started more games over the last couple of years than Hellebuck, right? But Bobrovsky's right up there. Freddie Anderson is up there.
You know, Freddie Anderson of the Leafs, I mean, the Leafs, I think, are going to be a better team probably than the Panthers. So, I mean, I would probably take Freddie Anderson over Bobrovsky just because, you know, I'm not, I mean, I think Florida's going to be better.
Yep.
And I think Quenneville's going to obviously improve that team just by default. I'm not sure that Toronto's not a better team than Florida, you know, as chagrined as I am to publicly admit that.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's not wrong to say that just because Toronto was a playoff team last year and Florida wasn't. I have Florida making the playoffs this year. I just think the moves that they've made.
We'll save that for next week.
Sure. And I think Anton Strahlman, for example, is a really underrated move by the Panthers. Obviously, Bobrovsky is a top five goalie in the league, so that just instantly makes them better. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about all the firepower they have, Barkov, Huberto, then obviously a healthy Vinny Trocheck, I see them getting back into the playoffs.
Programming note, next Saturday, it's our season preview show. You know it. You wait for it all summer long. Of course, the Jets season is really less than 2 weeks away. So next Saturday, it's our season preview show. We're going to be joined by our regular cast of crew. We'll talk a lot about Jets. Eric DeHatchick, hopefully, of The Athletic is going to join us. Kevin Allen of USA Today. They're our regular guests. So that's next Saturday. We'll get you set for the 2019-20 NHL season.
It's getting close.
I'm excited, guys. It's, you know, we've gone through the lull of the summer. The training camp is ramping up. Things are going to come to fruition very quickly. A lot of unanswered questions still about your Winnipeg Jets. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Kevin Woodley, Pete Jensen, and Gus Katsaros. Joined us as part of our Fantasy Hockey Preview Show. Michael Trakos and Dennis Bayak joined us. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe automatically, get it sent to your device each and every week. Rate and review us. It's also on tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Sean Assor doing a great job, for Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.